Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk Podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. I am Pat Boyle, joined as always by Charlie Lameliotis, and from The Athletic, our special guest this week. Covers the Hawks like a blanket. Scott Powers, how are you, sir?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for
pronouncing Charlie's name better than I ever did on my podcast. I'm already a step ahead of
you. He's been working on it.
We'll get to how you can subscribe to The Athletic and get the great content that Scott and all the hockey gurus over there crank out. We'll also have your email bag questions along the way. But let's start things off with the Stanley Cup Final, Game 1. I think the pregame ceremony just ended from the Vegas faithful. They win a back-and-forth game one, four lead changes, 6-4 is your final. What was your biggest takeaway, Scott, from game one last night?
I honestly flipped most of the night between. I watched the Ice Hawks game for much of the evening.
Oh, don't get ahead of ourselves. We're gonna get there.
So I don't know if I have a fair assessment of this. I watched a lot of the Warriors Rockets game too, and I mean from what I saw and everything that I read on Twitter, it was an exciting game, and obviously the more goals, the more entertaining. So. Vegas continues to win, you know. I mean, I expect them, I guess everyone expect them to crash out at some point, and they're obviously legit, and this story just keeps on building. So, it's building up to be a fun series from game one.
Charlie?
Yeah, so I think Vegas has scored in game one of each of their four rounds. They've scored within the first 5 minutes of the game.
I think it was seven last night, right?
Yeah, seven. It was a little bit outside, but – and then – the one thing I notice about Vegas particularly is every time Washington scores or every time the opponent scores, they respond right back. And I feel like if we want to find a Blackhawks tie-in, the Blackhawks never responded to goals like that. You know, like Vegas responds quickly. They're fast. This was as entertaining a game one as I've seen in recent memory.
Yeah. My biggest takeaway was the Ryan Reeves goal. And well, first of all, the fourth line of Vegas accounted for three tallies. But the Reeves goal where he cross-checks John Carlson from behind and you wondered how he could be so open on the doorstep and then buries it. I don't understand how on this stage NHL refereeing allows that to happen. I mean, Edzo pointed it out, you know, without overemphasizing it too much, but that one to me was just a head scratcher.
Yeah, I kept looking at the replay of that to try to like, what were the refs seeing, or maybe if all four of them just happened to miss it at the same time. Like,
I mean,
John
it's
Carlson
in front
is like
of the
face
net.
Is face down in the crease, and like it's literally like within a half second, and the puck is in the back of the net, and John Carlson looked like so confused that the goal actually counted because he looked straight at the ref like
are you,
wait,
are you
wait,
serious?
Seriously?
Like really? That's gonna stand?
Yeah.
So that was a head scratcher. By the way, I know you may not have seen this when you were checking out Game 7. Michael Kempney got another assist, the first Washington goal. He gets a helper on that. Did you ever think, when the trade deadline went down, that the Kempney deal to the Capitals would turn out to be the most significant deadline move that, you know, the former Hawk making the biggest impact? And that said, did the Hawks give up on him too early?
No, I think with him being becoming an unrestricted free agent, that you're going to trade, you know, like yeah. It was time for him to go, and there was no future for the Hawks at that point. So I get why they traded him. I think Kempney was adequate at times, you know, and at times better than adequate for the Hawks. It was inconsistent, and I think someone had to do with the pairings and just how this season went, but it seemed like at times he got in a rhythm, and then obviously his ice time would vary, and his, you know, his playing time and all that, and it affected him. And it was a team that obviously acquired him and wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt and put some trust in him. And I think that confidence is he's flourished. So I still don't think Kennedy is a game changer, but he can be a piece to a puzzle, and I think that's what he's showing.
Right. A piece when he's paired with John Carlson, that's going to make anybody better. But let's go to the mailbag, and I'll throw this one at you, Charlie. This one comes from Wyoming Zelda. She says, Kempney has said that now when he makes a mistake, he doesn't worry about being benched, and Gerard Gallant is being praised for playing players even after making a mistake. Well, Gallant is
wrong coach with
Vegas, but that's besides the point. Do you think Coach Q will ever change his ways of benching players after mistakes? And I guess this would go to, you know, with improvement needed all over the organization, from, you know, the roster building to the coaching as well. Does Joel need to grow a bit in this area as far as a player feeling like they're going to be benched after the first miscue?
Yeah, he's played a lot of youngsters this past year, and there were guys who were given some longer leashes, especially, I think, as the season faded away. It's hard because, I get where that's at, and sometimes, and I think a lot of players feel like that. I feel like Forsling felt like that, and I feel like a lot of the younger guys that come in, Gustafson the first time around said he felt a lot like that, and now he felt more confident, and, he felt like he had the trust, and I think that trust, it snowballs and it leads in a positive direction for these players. But, the product just wasn't, it just wasn't good enough on the ice this year. Joel has his faults, and there's certain ways that he's not going to break out of his mold. But, when I look at the defense, I don't know how long you can go with those same pairings. There's some same defensemen continually. If they're making mistakes and the goals are going in, because, I look back at this year, I get where some of the gripes are coaching-wise, but I just thought more of it was personnel and looking at the defense. I mean, they went through that many defensemen for a certain reason. There's, in years past, he stuck with defensemen. And you look at even Van Riemsdyk and Nick Leddy, and there were stretches where he went with younger guys for a long time. And Kempney's not even a young guy.
He's not. Compared to the other guys.
Yeah, so I get it to an extent, but I don't think he has that short of a fuse with all young guys. I think it's when they show those inconsistencies, that's when they pile up, and that's when he makes a move.
Right, and I don't think it's necessarily Kempney either, because, Jan Ruda, Gustav Forsling, all those guys, like the Ruda-Forsling pairing was like the best for the first month of the season, and then Jan Ruda, found himself in the doghouse. They all had their fair share of healthy scratches. So I don't think it's like Michael Kempney was the guy that didn't fit in the city. They were all trying to figure it out, and they're all so young. But I think it's three things. I think it's, first of all, he's playing with John Carlson for the most part. Second, I just think it's system. Quinville likes his guys defensive responsible and get the puck to the forwards. And Barry Trotz, I don't think mine's his D-men skating it out, kind of like Trevor Daly. I just think of this as Trevor Daly situation, where it just wasn't a fit. And then the third thing is just Barry Trotz has given him such a long leash. Like, he makes a mistake and there's no, might be a scratch the next game, so.
It's a better team, right?
Like, it is.
I mean, a better team. And I think that all, I think a supporting cast has something to do with it.
Very well structured, yeah.
Yeah, and Trotz may not worry about the defensive liability, knowing that they can pump in five goals or win games like that, and that they have Braden Holtby in the crease. The Ice Hogs Calder Cup run, you said you were watching that. It came to an end last night in Game 6 in overtime, which most of the games went to OT. Three of their four losses were in OT. What was your biggest takeaway from this, unprecedented deep run by the Ice Hogs in the Calder Cup playoffs?
I thought this year was different than a lot, where the Ice Hogs, they traded for some guys that make the AHL team better and brought some guys like Boma and France and down, and adding DiDomenico and Clendenning, guys that probably don't have futures with the Blackhawks. They did that to enable guys like Kampf Highmore and Johnson and Hayden and Forsling to get on a longer run, because they sat a lot of guys that they're under contract, you know, for 410 and Anthony Lewis and Graham Knott. And there were a lot of guys who under contract, Luke Snuggard, guys that are on contract that sat throughout these playoffs, but they felt like their best bet of winning and continuing the development of some of those younger guys was to play the older guys too. So it was kind of this mixture of young and old. I thought Victor Adsell was one of the big stories of the playoffs, where you know, he came in pretty hot with the Ice Hogs, and then he looked pretty good with the first game with the Blackhawks, and then kind of went through an adjustment period. And I thought throughout the playoffs he kind of figured it out, and they moved him from center to wing, and I think that opened him up a little bit more offensively. But he was scoring goals, and you know, was effective on the power play, and you can see where he can be a piece of the puzzle next year for the Blackhawks, where he has such a big shot. And you know, for him to come over and score what, 7 or 8 goals in the playoffs as he did, I think that's yeah, that's huge for the Blackhawks. For the Ice Hawks to go that far gave him that many games in North American ice too.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, and we watch Edsel as well. I guess my curiosity would be, do you think they moved him to wing to get his confidence going, get him acclimated to North American game, or do you think big picture, because I mean, we know this team lacks depth down the middle, so do you think when he does, say it's next year or whatever, do you think he'll be a center, or do you think they'll keep him at wing organizationally?
Yeah, I didn't get a feel for that. You know, when I asked Jeremy Colleton about it, he said that it was more getting him comfortable and not having him think so much defensively. But the results kind of speak for themselves. So I think if, you know, if they go into camp trying mid-center and it's not working, maybe he's just better on the wing, where, you know, you want him to be the offensive asset and not have to worry about the defensive zone or, you know, battling for pucks, because and he can help you on the power play. I mean, you look at the one-timer, what he can do shooting-wise. Yeah, I don't know. I even, you know, he played with Highmore and Johnson at some points, and if Johnson got thrown out, they still had Highmore taking faceoff. So, you know, I don't know what Adsell's faceoff numbers were, so maybe that was something too. But yeah, I think the fact there's some versatility there too. But they have a shooter. You know, I wrote about it a little bit, was, you know, that Kane line struggled to have a shooter, and you know, if you can have someone have that one timer or someone setting up and beside Kane and Schmaltz, maybe that's an option where, you know, Adsell's playing that left wing. So you know, maybe that's something bigger picture too, that I feel like the Blackhawks do when they move someone at the AHL level, like there's usually a bigger picture thought process behind it. So at least they had me thinking a little bit about where maybe they project him somewhere else other than center.
Yeah, and I think another big kind of factor in this is, like, I was looking up yesterday at the goal chart. There were 10 goals scored, and eight of the 5-on-5 goals were scored like literally inside the crease. And I just think he could be a guy, like a Ryan Hartman guy on the power play, where you just plant him in front. I mean, like, he's 6'3",
he's big.
6'4". Like, he's huge.
Yeah.
And on skates, you know, he's even, you know, taller. So, I mean, that's
one thing he did say to me I thought was really telling about a week or two ago. He said, I need to get more intense on the smaller rink. Like, I thought that was a very telling, you know, comment. And first of all, he's a great kid to talk to. I mean, like, he's and he's been dealt quite a bit. I mean, you know, he's on a Swedish team. He literally, the season ends, he gets traded. He's in Rockford 1 minute, and then he's, you know, he's with the Hawks making his debut, or how it went down. I mean, it was a whirlwind within a week.
Well, it's crazy. I mean, 2 years ago, he was in the second division in Sweden, right? I mean, this is a guy that he wasn't the guy that was touted. You know, everything has kind of happened over the last 3 or 4 years. He's gone from the second division, MVP, went to the first division. I think he tied for 7th in goals, and then, you know, he's in the AHL, and then he's in the NHL, and here you are. So everything's happened for him quickly. And like you said, I mean, talking to him, I think he's very realistic, where it's not like, you know, it just seems like he analyzes things. Like, he's like, this isn't good enough. You know, I need to be faster. And, you know, he's like, I was surprised. You know, I thought skating was going to be an issue, and it hasn't been as bad as I thought. So, you know, just honest answers and, you know, very, you know, this is what I need to work on this summer sort of thing. So I think he's very, you know, he's analyzing everything as he's experienced it and kind of understanding that I need to get better in these areas if I'm going to. And now that he's got a taste at NHL too, it's not just been in the American League. I think the fact they got him in some NHL games, that he can even differentiate between the two levels and what it takes to, I guess, succeed.
Back to that mailbag, Clay Swallow had a question about Victor, and I think we sort of added or answered that in our last couple answers. Possibility of him going to wing when he's with the Hawks next year, if he is. Clay had wondered if he could be Artem Anisimov's replacement as the third line center. So we'll see, you know, if they end up putting him back organizationally because they lack depth there. We'll see down the road. Sandra Muir has a question. Which prospect are you most excited about? She has on there Aitzel, Henry Yokiharu, or somebody else. Who are you, Scott, and Charlie, most excited about from a prospect standpoint?
I know it was nice to see Sakura come up, but I think there's a lot more to untap there. Where, you know, I think Rich Schmaltz went through this stage too, where you're just not comfortable with the puck and trying to figure out how much ice time you have. And the way that Sakura was at his Northeastern his senior, he was just so dominating at that level, and he showed so much skill. And you know, I think he had 3 assists in 5 games with the Hawks, so he did something. But I still think he's the Blackhawks' biggest prospect and the guy who could be someone that steps in the lineup next year. You know, Yokiharu has a huge upside, but I still don't know. You know, it could be a couple of years away. So I think seeing Sakura, you know, having tasted the NHL and giving him an offseason kind of work on things and to come back next year, I think he's someone that, you know, whether it's the second or third line or, you know, somewhere in the top 9, I think he fits, and I think he's someone who can influence a game.
Yeah, it's funny, though, that we – like don't even consider like Sakura a prospect anymore because everyone just slots him in as in like a top 9 role. But yeah, I mean, that's a good one because, you know, we saw him play on the first line, and but is he going to be a first liner next year? Like where do you slot him in? I just think Henry Yokiharu, I mean, he could be a game changer on defense if he's ready, you know. So like I look at Boston and they inherited Charlie McAvoy and Brandon Carlo and all these guys on defense, and like Zdeno Chara is 40 years old and he's still playing at a high level, probably in part because Charlie McAvoy is on his team. You know, it's just like that infusion of youth. So if Yokiharu can provide some of that, and I'm not saying maybe he's going to start with the team next year, but if he can come in mid-season or whatever and be that, you know, spark plug, I mean, that's going to be – I'm interested in seeing how his development goes from training camp.
One of the projects I was working on this week is ranking the prospects now at the end of the season, and I decided the new criteria was that it was just gonna be like, anyone who doesn't have a stable NHL job yet, you know. So I threw Gustav Forsling in there, and I started looking at the numbers, and you know, he was a guy who wasn't supposed to be in the NHL last year, and he kind of forced their hand, and I think he's like the 5th youngest prospect that's signed by the Blackhawks. He's played in 79 NHL games, and out of his draft class, I think he's tied for 3rd in most NHL games. So, like, you start to think of Forsling as someone who's been around a bit, but at his age, he's still 21, and out of his draft class, there aren't many defensemen who've played as many NHL games. So, I'm kind of interested to see where that goes to, where I think of the defensemen, they have a lot of left-handed defensemen, a lot of young guys, and I still think Forsling, you know, especially watching him in the Calder Cup playoffs, where you look at him skate and you look at some of the things that he can do, and you know, he's getting shots through, and the way that he can break out, and yeah, just the way to defend, and you know, there's still some inconsistencies there, but I still sort of think of Forsling as this guy that, you know, he has top 4 potential, and I think you mentioned early in the year with him and Ruda, and so I guess Forsling maybe written off a little bit just because he's bounced around, but he's still a young guy that has a lot of potential.
I think what was bizarre about last year for him was, of the young guys, he made the most impression during preseason and kind of had the most juice heading into the campaign. And then when he was finally taken out of the lineup and sent to Rockford, now I know he got injured late in the season and that probably prevented him from being a call-up, but like I kept waiting. I'm like, well, this season's been over since, you know, late January, where is he? And he never came back. But when we went down to cover Rockford during the Calder Cup, that you heard Jeremy Culleton talk about the things he was bringing to the table that doesn't necessarily show up on the score sheet. So, and I think I also heard this organizationally, he didn't accept the demotion maybe in the most positive way, which, you know, I talked to John Hayden about that as well. That's a tough pill. Like, for a guy like John Hayden, he did not deserve to be sent down. He was on the most productive line, the most consistent line, I should say, that in that fourth line role all season long, and he gets sent down because they wanted Hannes Stroza to come up and only had so many guys that, you know, didn't have to go through waivers or what have you. But when I look at what Forsling, the potential, I'm beginning to see that you know, his stock is beginning to build once again.
Yeah, and I'm starting to wonder whether he's becoming I don't think he's going to be an everyday. Like, I think he's an NHLer, but I'm curious to see whether he actually fits into the Blackhawks' plans long term, or if he's kind of a guy that you might need to flip for another.
I mean, you got Forsling and Gustafsson, Osterley, and then they just signed. You also have Dahlstrom coming back, but then you have they just signed Tolola and Dennis Gilbert and Lucas Carlson,
Blake Hillman.
And those are all left-handed shots, and I'm curious to see how this unfolds because there's like 50 left-handed shots, you know, and Darren Radish is about the only right-handed shot that's still in the American League. So I'm curious to see what they do because I don't think. At some point, they're in having signed Gustafsson and Ruda, that right now everyone looks like they're coming back, and I don't know if that's a recipe for success. You know?
And last year, too, they didn't have anything to trade at the deadline. This year, they, like, replenished everywhere, and, like, at some point this season, you need to, like, trade some of the prospects to actually help.
And then they have Chad Kristoff is probably your way, and then they may I think they take a defenseman in the first round, too, where I think they're still looking for probably a top four left-handed defenseman. So I may not be that, you know, I think they're going to take the best player available with that first pick. But if it's not the first pick, I think the second one, they may look at a left-handed D too.
Yeah, well, more on the draft coming up in just a second. And it is, as we were talking to Mark Kelly, it's a deep draft when it comes to defensemen. You did a story on Jeremy Culleton, the Rockford head coach. Charlie and I went down there a couple times here in the last few weeks. Man, is you come away impressed. Like, I know he's 33 years of age. You did a story on how his Swedish team misses him immensely, and I think they were weren't they relegated to that team or something like that?
No, they stayed up again.
They stayed up.
Yeah, they barely.
But like, you know, and just the impact he's made in year one with Rockford. Man, I could see this guy in the NHL in less than 5 years, sooner rather than later. Your thoughts on what you've seen?
Yeah, it's funny because I asked Mark Bernard about if other NHL teams come calling, and he made it sound like that if they probably wouldn't allow it at this point, and you know, saying that he's under contract, so it's not something they're concerned about right now. But yeah, he has a bright future. I mean, this is a guy who you know, his career was cut short by concussions, and you know, he was out in Mora. Playing for the Swedish team in the second division, and just, you know, they're hoping that, you know, he could rejuvenate his career, and it didn't happen, and he stuck around and hung around and ended up becoming, you know, pretty good friends with the president, and they clicked, and, you know, they were having problems coaching, and they just took a chance on him making him a head coach, you know, from Flair to coach, and you know, there's some learning curves, and he certainly felt you know, I think the community was you know, unsure how this was going to play out, and, you know, over his I think it was 3-4 seasons there, he certainly won them over. And, you know, one of the, you know, when I talked to one of his former players, saying that the community wanted to build a statue for him when it was over.
Right.
The fact that he got him promoted to the top division, SHL, and they just stayed up this past year, and how big it is, like, it's with TV money over there now, like, staying up in the top division, it's a lot harder. I think the separation between the two divisions, it's grown. But yeah, I mean, just he's been a very aggressive defensively, and I think that's a big thing, talking a lot of defensemen this year. You know, Gustafsson and a lot of those guys were they felt like in years past where they've been asked to sag and kind of play back, and Colleton's been aggressive, and, you know, they're looking to you know, not let clean entries in, and they're looking to, you know, break teams up coming out of the zone and the neutral zone. And you know, you've heard, you know, from all these players, they've all just said positive things. And then you know, I think he did benefit too from that. They, you know, I think, you know, Ted Dent last year had some issues with the Blackhawks trading away guys, and I think that helped that team last year, the fact that they you know, they brought in some veterans, and it helped that team go so young. But yeah, but everyone you talk to, he's been a positive influence in the way that he's coached, and as young as he is, and you know, even talking to the Sweden people, just how they talk about him, just as a person off the ice too, it's just he comes away as impressive as you say, and you certainly foresee, you know, he's got some bright future.
One of the cool things about the Athletic is just the commitment that you guys have to hockey, and the lengths that they will go to support your ideas, like going to Denmark and things like that. Before we get into Denmark real quickly, tell folks how they can subscribe to The Athletic.
Yeah, you just go to theathletic.com and you can click on Chicago. And I believe you can check out so many free articles and get a free trial. And there's an app too. And the app's
great. Great app, by the way. Very friendly.
Yeah. So yeah, I think go on there and you know, check out some articles and see if you like it. But yeah, it's, you know, obviously it's gone a long way since from when Greenberg and I and it first started, and you know, to be surrounded now by just some of the best hockey writers in the world, it's something and humbling. And like you said, they've been so supportive and allowed me to, you know, I'm gonna write this huge prospect piece, you know, that I've been working all week, that it's not something that probably would have happened at ESPN. So yeah, it's been a great experience. And yeah, you know, it just, I guess it's let our work speak for ourselves, so people want to check it out in The Athletic.
It's great stuff. You go to Denmark, biggest takeaway, and I guess the other thing would be, we saw DeBrincat and Kane on the same line at times at the Worlds. It doesn't sound like Joel is a fan of that. We didn't understand. I mean, once in a while you'd see them on the ice together at the end of power plays or whatnot. Look, there aren't a lot of guys that can bring the one-timer. There's not a lot of guys that can make the cross-ice pass that Panarin used to have with Kane. I think DeBrincat has some of that. And your thoughts on potentially seeing that as a semi-regular combination or at any time next year, DeBrincat and Kane and maybe Schmaltz?
I think what it comes down to, it's going to come down to ice time, because, you know, your top six usually gets a larger load of the ice time. And DeBrincat, you know, as a rookie, to put up what he did, I mean, he's going to deserving of a top six role at some point. And, you know, whether that's with Taves or, you know, with on that second line with Kane, I think you have to kind of fit him in somewhere, because, yeah, he just, you know, I get why you try to ease him in this year, and he flourished, but in time as he gets older, and I think he's more going to be more accustomed to NHL next year. And if he's going to have that kind of goal scoring potential, even greater. And, you know, I think if Kane says something too, I imagine people notice if, you know, Kane says that, you know, I sort of like this, you know, this could work. So I'm sure it's noted. And so I'm curious to see. And I think we saw it in the preseason for a minute, and there was all this excitement about this line, and it kind of faded away as, you know, as Joel moved away from it. So, you know, it's a larger ice surface out there, so, you know, it's not exactly the same game, but they both enjoyed it, and Kane did seem like he set up the DeBrincat, and they do fit when you look at least on paper and the small sample size. So, yeah, I'm not holding my breath for this one, but it makes sense, at least in a lot of ways. I just don't know if it makes sense to Joel.
Yeah, I remember we were doing a podcast after a game in like January or something, and that was a possibility. You were like, just put them together, and I think if you do put Kane and DeBrincat together, it allows you to put, like, anyone in the like, you can put Artem Anisimov, and it can be your new, like, Panarin, Kane, Anisimov line. And because Anisimov obviously wasn't very productive at 5-on-5 last year. So, I mean, you could put Nick Schmaltz on the third line. Ideally, you wouldn't want that, but it gives you options, and I think they should be playing together on the power play. But it also, Don Granato was there at the Worlds, too, so he got, you know, it's not like it's just Kane and DeBrincat saying, hey, we want to play together. You know, Don Granato is going to go back and report to the coaching staff.
And Stan,
like,
Stan, you know, was there.
Yeah, Stan was there too. I think he arrived later, right?
Yeah,
But anyways.
Do you think Anisimov, I know this is like the big talk, is Anisimov can be dealt, and I saw him in Chicago the other day, and I think it scared him a little bit because it was slightly after I saw him in Denmark at a restaurant. But
are you following me?
But yeah, I don't know. I think they enjoy Chicago's family, and you know, he has to give him a list. And I know right. That there's sort of this assumption, because he didn't work 5-on-5, you know, that he'd be dealt. And, you know, I haven't heard either way. His agent says that they haven't been asked for a list. And so it's got to fit one. They want to obviously want to trade them. Two, he's got to give them the team that the Blackhawks can trade with. So I think on paper it makes sense too, where he wasn't as effective. I don't know if it's.
You possibly could be stealing from my bold prediction at the end of this podcast, but since the spoiler's already out there,
I should have actually looked at the paper.
Actually
handed it to me, and I.
No.
We were on. You got lost in.
Yeah,
the
but that was all my fault. I think my biggest issue. I just don't think he's a $4.5 million player. Like I think that money can be better spent. But then again, there aren't a lot of options at center, and there certainly aren't a lot of options with big centermen. He's horrible at the face-off circle, well-documented. I think you, if you're looking to find a top four defenseman, you're going to have to give up something. Mm-hmm. I would not mind giving up Anisimov and a valuable piece prospect to go, you know, hopefully, you know, package that on. You might even need a draft pick to get a questionable guy who could be your fourth defenseman, a top four defenseman.
Do you think they move Hossa's deal too?
I think that's on the table. I just don't want to see, like, necessarily Tabo Teravainen and has to go because you want Bickle. Like, if you can just, the league has already said this is a legitimate medical problem, and they can just keep putting him on long-term disability. I mean, that.
I was surprised that he spoke.
I was too. I think that caught some people off guard.
I heard that he wasn't exactly happy about the article too.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think he wanted to say, at least publicly, everything he said, because I don't think the Hawks wanted him to say that he wasn't playing again. And I don't think Boland or those guys ever said, yeah, I'm done. So I think there's ways around this, and it's not going to become an issue. But I don't think Hossa's doing any more interviews, and I don't think that he, looking back, he probably regrets the interview a little
bit. But I don't think that was the worst thing to happen, because now that it's out there, the Hawks can, like, the Hawks can actually, because the Hawks never said anything. Hossa spoke to, like,
but the Hawks would have been fine with it never being said. Like, right. Behind closed door. I think they met with him and said that there's a possibility we trade this. Because he has to give them a consent because he's got the no movement clause.
Right.
But I think that, you know, he would have said that anyway. So,
yeah. But, I mean, and the only teams that would be teams that are below the floor that want the $5 million cap hit or whatever it is.
Five point something.
5.275. But it's only, in essence, a $1 million a year real money cost for them. And so that would cost them, what, $3 million?
And you probably get a prospect or a
draft pick. But, I mean, look, if you can do the accounting in a different way and not give up something to get shed that money, you know, then go about it that route. I don't need, for lack of Vinny Hinestroza or somebody that leaving because you're trying to get rid of Hossa's deal. Yeah. If you can just, you know, wait till the season starts and then put them on long term.
Right. Yeah. And then the other day, I think it was Bill Daly announced that the cap is expected to go up 78, in between 78 to 82. So if it goes, let's just say 80, that's a $5 million cap increase. And I can see a team like Arizona and Carolina saying, we need to get up there, but we don't want to.
Right.
You know, and especially Carolina, it sounds like they're just going to
fire sale.
Yeah, it's just going to be a fire sale. Like, they're going to need someone to get to the floor. So, yeah, I could definitely see them trading Hossa's contract.
We're up against the clock here. Draft is in Dallas, June 22nd. You'll be there. Charlie and myself will be there, going all in here, NBC Sports Chicago. Hawks select 8th and 27th in that first round. We mentioned deep draft for defensemen. Mark Kelly said, good winger crop. Gut feeling, do they move up from 8? Do they use that 27th to package it all? What's your gut feeling on who they may go after with that first selection in the first round?
I think they take the best available player with 8th. I don't think they
NHL
move.
NHL ready, though?
I don't think there's anyone. Like, there's very few
very
that are
going
to. Yeah. And even at the opening, you know, like the first, you get Dahlin and I don't know if anyone else is exactly
like a top two.
I think that's the thing, is that as great as this pick is for the Hawks, it probably won't impact them for another year. So I don't think they move unless there's someone they really, really want and it doesn't cost them too much, because I think if anywhere between 4 and 9, it sounds like you can get a pretty good player, and whether it's a winger or I think there's one Finnish center that's pretty good, and then there's obviously an abundance of defensemen, and it's such a deep crop of defensemen too. It sounds like that even if you wait, that you can probably get someone good. And I think they take a best available player and maybe package that second pick, because I think that first pick's too valuable, where you can get someone that even at 8th, I think you're going to get someone who's going to be an impact player, and you just have to wait a couple of years.
Yeah, I don't think the Hawks are going to trade that 8 pick. Like, I can see them trying to trade. I don't know. I can see them trying to move up, but I don't know if they have like the ammo. So my bold prediction is I don't think they're going to keep the 27th pick. I think they either attach it to something, because I don't think that 27th pick is really important. Like if they take someone at that, like they have already.
That's where they've been picking the last 10 years. Exactly. So I think it has been.
Because if you pick there, like that guy is, that player still needs a few years to develop. Like you can trade that pick for like a D-man, or if you want to package it with the 8 and someone else to move up a spot, I don't know.
Was I supposed to classify it as a bold prediction?
No, but you do.
Oh, so you would agree? Do you think they're going
to trade? I don't know if I had to come up with a bold prediction if that's.
I'll go with that. They're going to trade 27.
They're going to trade 27.
I don't know what, either to move up or to get another point.
I am on record. Artem Anisimov will be moved in a package deal for what they think is a top four defenseman, and which we're all hoping is a top four defenseman. Scotty, do you have a? It can be Stanley Cup final related. It can be free agency. It can be draft related. It can even be the guy that gave you the bad directions to come to NBC Sports Chicago related.
I think they're going to do something aggressive. I don't know how it's going to play out, but, you know, I Craig Cousins had a story, you know, mentioning that. I don't think it's Tavares, but I you know, like a James Van Riemsdyk or something. Or I think they're thinking about something outside the box. And I think when you look at someone like JVR, where he could be someone that's going to help you on the power play and maybe be that left wing for Kane, and, you know, just be that net presence. And I don't know if it's him, but I'm kind of ready for anything, especially coming off of, you know, when you see Panarin and Jarmolson go in a year where they had success, and now that they didn't make the playoffs, and there's some pressure. Like, they can't stand pat, and they have the money to play with. So.
And the window for the four, and if you include Corey in that, the core players, that window is closing dramatically.
Yeah, and I mean, the Crawford thing is, it's such a unknown, you know. So I think Carter Hutton makes a lot of sense for them. I'd be surprised that even if them signing this Kevin Lincoln and this Finnish guy who seems like he's got a lot of potential, but they have now Colin Dealey and Lincoln and Berube and Forsberg and Crawford, and I still don't know if that there's a number two goalie in there. So I'm ready. I think they're going to be aggressive, and I don't know exactly how it's going
to
play out.
But John Tavares is coming to Chicago.
Exactly. That's my bold
prediction. So, like, and like, we thought the eve of last year's draft was, like, nuts with Panarin being dealt and Saad returning. You think something like their game changer is going to probably take place right before the draft? Would that be your best guesstimate?
I mean, free agents. I mean, there's some decent names in free agency. July, so it's, yeah, I mean, everything happens within that week there. But, right. Yeah, Blackhawks have been, I mean, draft days have been interesting in the past. I mean, Shaw and, Panarin and John. Yeah, it's, I'm sort of just kind of ready to work. So. Yeah.
Well, we love your work with The Athletic. We love the commitment to the hockey beat up and down from the entire website. And keep up the great work.
Oh, thanks for
having
me.
Don't be a stranger. Thank you for coming on this week's show. Charlie, happy belated birthday to you and your brother, Paul.
Thank you.
How old are you guys?
26.
The twins?
Yeah.
And twins.
Yeah. This 26 is when we're like actually like adults, right?
Theoretically.
Get off my theoretically. Parents' insurance.
How about that? How about that? My bold prediction is that you'll move out of the basement soon.
That's it. That already happened for you.
All right. See, that one of my bold predictions came true. That's going to do it for us. Make sure you check out how to subscribe to The Athletic at theathletic.com. For Scott Powers, Charlie Romeliotis, and Pat Boyle, thank you for listening to the Hawks Talk Podcast, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Enjoy the Stanley Cup Final, everybody. We'll see you down the road.